Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to Ask a PI Talk Radio with hosts David Duchesneau, author, PI, former Marine, and former New Hampshire State Trooper, and Rusty McDonald, PI, author, motivational speaker, and international radio talk show host.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Ask a PI on Monday night. We are on one of our last Mondays of the month. Actually, I think it is the last Monday of the month, isn't it, David? Lord, did this month blow by like the storm that's blowing in?
Yeah, good evening, Rusty. Yeah, I guess it is. This is the last Monday, and boy, we're going to have one doozy of a storm. It's well on its way, that's for sure.
That's what I heard. I mean, all the shelves of the grocery store are wiped out, and then I read the report that it's only supposed to be maybe 2 feet of snow, and I'm scratching my head going, well, is the zombie apocalypse happening at the same time? Did I miss something? But evidently people are panicking. I have no idea. I missed something somewhere.
It was amazing. You know, I went to gas up my truck earlier this afternoon, and I'm sitting there gassing up the truck, and I noticed this woman driving a pickup truck come into the gas station, and it's a large gas station, and she drives in with the pickup truck, and she's got a plow on it, and she drives in, and the next thing all you can hear is crunch and everything else, and she runs into a Cadillac while she's going to gas up, and she keeps going, and she pulls right into one of the lanes to gas her truck up, never stops. And so the guy is running after her, saying, hey, you just hit me.
And he was probably fit to be tied.
Oh my God. You know, I love it. I mean, it's crazy what happens to people, you know, when they hear that we got a big storm coming and everybody starts panicking. And, hey, it's Mother Nature. This is it. This is living in New England. This is what it's all about.
Exactly. Well, and you know what's even more interesting coming from the South and living through this extraordinary experience of New England? I can't figure out why everybody freaks out about snow. That's what happens here. And I know we've been very blessed this winter. I mean, we have had hardly any snow, really. We've had some brutal cold temperatures, but not like a traditional New England winter where it's snowing 4 days out of seven. So maybe people lost practice. I don't know.
Well, you know, the whole thing is you got to be prepared. I mean, this is where we live. This is this is where we chose to live, and this goes with the territory. I mean, it's a snowstorm.
Careful with that, David. Careful.
Well, it's a snowstorm. I mean,
right.
We can't do anything about it. It's coming. Okay.
speaking of plow drivers that like to plow into Cadillacs to be the first to get gas and just crazy snowstorms and being prepared and, you know, being vigilant about your environment and your surroundings. Tonight is a really exciting topic because I am a believer in safety versus security and the difference and the concept and really understanding how to be secure without being paranoid, of course. You know, here I am a city girl. So my version of safety and security is a little more heightened, I think, than a lot of other people's, but I think the show is very valuable. And since everybody's hunkered in for the night, let's talk about it. What's the difference between safety and security, David?
Well, I think the first thing we should do is probably give a definition of safety. And, you know, safety is just what it says. The definition is the state of being safe. That's what safety is. Yeah, the condition of being protected against physical, social, spiritual, financial, political, emotional, occupational, psychological, educational, or other types of consequences of failure, any danger, or any other event which could be considered non-desirable. What is that? That's a mouthful right there, isn't it? Non-desirable. I love that one. It also can be defined, you know, to be controlled and recognized hazards to achieve an acceptable level of risk. You know, and I'm going to get into this, you know, with this to achieve an acceptable level of risk. And we're going to get into that a little bit deeper as we continue talking about this. And then you got security. And security is the degree of resistance to or protection from harm. It applies to any vulnerable or valuable asset, such as a person, dwelling, community, nation, or organization. And that those are the two definitions. And with that, I'm going to show and we're going to talk about how we in the private sector, we being the private investigators, how we get involved in this, you know, and we deal with this on a not a daily level. I guess we all deal with it on a daily level, actually, your safety and your security, because everybody wants to be safe in their home. And so they do everything possible to secure, you know, their home. And that's, if you feel safe in your home, I mean, that's your safe haven. And so we do deal with this on a daily basis. But, you know, in the wake of the violence and all the threats that we have today, there is often a costly, ineffective, and ill-advised response to security. And I'm not saying that people aren't doing their jobs. I'm just saying that sometimes we just don't get proactive enough. Rather than a well-thought-out, practical, and preventive approach to safety. And that's the whole key right there. Practical and preventative approach to safety. Because, you know, if we're proactive in our daily lives, then, you know, we're going to watch out what's going on around us. And like you said it right at the beginning, you know, if we're aware of our surroundings, and we're going to be that much more safe or safer wherever we are, because you're going to be, you know, you're going to be looking out for things that aren't normal. You're going to be looking out for things that stand out that shouldn't be there. And that's really important. Safety and security are too often used interchangeable, as if they mean the same thing. And they don't mean the same thing. And, you know, and you have to understand the difference between both. What does it mean to be safe? And, you know, to be safe, the answer to this question, we must first realize that safety has both emotional and physical attributes, and that both must be in agreement for safety to be achieved. And what that is saying is that if you don't feel safe, you're not safe. You know, it's in the mind. It's really how you feel. And I'll tell you, people should listen to themselves, because if you have that intuition, if you have that gut feeling that something just isn't right, well, then it isn't right. And you should remove yourself from wherever you are, and you should get out of there. And again, I'm going to go right back to our profession. I mean, I tell this to people all the time. If you're with somebody, you know, in a relationship with somebody, and you don't feel good about that relationship, you feel that maybe your safety is at risk, you should get out of it. You should get away from it, because you could be opening yourself up for a real nightmare. And, you know, and that's where we get into these domestic issues. And it's in today's world, it's everywhere. I mean, let's face it. Everybody you talk to seems to be going through some type of trauma in their life. And, you know, it doesn't take much to change what's going on in your life. What it takes is just the right attitude and to make a decision. And we all have choices in life, and you can choose to get out of it. And sometimes that might be the better way to go. And if you remove yourself from the situation, especially if it's unsafe, then you're going to be helping yourself to secure yourself, and you're going to feel much better about yourself in the end. And that's the real deal. I mean, that's just common sense. But it's hard to teach common sense to anybody. You can't do that. Either people have it or they don't. And to be proactive, it's hard to get people to be proactive. Can we predict what's happening down the road? No. But like I said, if you have that gut feeling, if you have that intuition, and if you're street smart, you know, you can keep yourself safe, believe me, wherever you are. And you can remove yourself from wherever you are so that you can stay safe. And, you know, parents know this all too well, and they really do. You know, right from the get-go, right from the beginning, when a child is placed, in the mother's arms, right from the womb, you know, parents devote themselves to not just ensuing the emotional well-being of that child, but they are also dedicate themselves to protecting their children from harm. You know, a small child is tucked in bed at night, and what do, especially a newborn? You know, we swaddle them. We wrap them up. You know, we make them feel like they're still in the womb. So they can't move. They can't do anything. And they feel safe. That child feels safe because that's what it's used to. And we're no different. We're no different at all. We do the same thing to each other. You know, there's some people that you really feel good to be with. You feel safe around. And there's other people that you don't feel good being around. And those are the people you should stay away from. And that's just, again, like I said, it's just common sense. And it's too bad more people don't practice that common sense. I don't know if, you know, especially when I was a police officer, you know, you used to go to these domestic things. And we go to a domestic, and you, for some reason, I don't care how badly, you know, the other partner, whoever it is, you know, would get beat, would get thrown around. And we go in and we would separate them, and you go to arrest the individual that did it. In the olden days, you know, if the person that was being victimized didn't sign a complaint or didn't want to, you couldn't do anything about it. Well, today that's much different because of the domestic violence issues. Today, the police, the authorities have the right to take that individual that has done any harm to anybody and take them right out of the situation. But as soon as we started to put the cuffs on that individual that assaulted somebody, it seems like the other person would start crying, start yelling, don't take him away. And you're saying to yourself, why do they do this? Why do they put themselves through this stuff? And that's that emotional thing that we were talking about, you know. And it's amazing. It's just truly amazing why people would stay with anybody who would beat on them. And I can never get it through my head. Why would they want to do that to themselves? But yet, the reason why is because they feel that they're safe with that person. They might not be secure because they sure as hell are not secure while they're getting beaten on. But for some reason, they have that feeling of safety with that person, and they don't want to be alone. But anyway, we get into this as private sector through all kinds of different areas that we deal with when dealing with security and safety. And we know what the difference is. And I want you to think of security as if it were an overarching umbrella protecting our safety. It's just like, you know, you use an umbrella to protect you from the rain. Well, that umbrella is the security, and you use it to protect you for safety. And that's how simple it really is. And it's not complicated. It's not complicated at all. I mean, we have, you know, public safety. I mean, you got all kinds of safety out here. In you know, in our daily lives, I mean, look at going through an airport. Look at all the things that we have to go through to get through to an airport. And why do we go through all that? So that we're safe when we're flying on that plane. And it's because of all the bad things that have happened over the years. And it's all because of all these people who have always wanted to hurt us from whatever nationality or wherever they came from, or even if they're from here. Some people are just bad, and there's no two ways around it. They couldn't be good if they had to. And that's what we try to keep our family and ourselves safe from. You know, when I do a lot of threat assessments, and we used to do a lot more, especially school safety. I mean, we were involved so heavily with school safety before 9/11. We really were. And we were doing a great job. I mean, we had a lot of these issues that are coming up with guns and stuff like that. We didn't have that because we were proactive. And we went into the schools, and we treated the schools and made sure that they were safe havens, you know, for our children to learn in. And we didn't even think of doing colleges or anything at that particular time. Because you didn't hear about all the violence that went on in a college, even though we know it was there, because we had all kinds of incidents that were happening with rapes and everything else, people breaking into dorms, but it wasn't as prevalent as it is now, or has been, you know, here in the past. But we're in a new era since 9/11, and everybody has to take control of their safety and their security, and they really do. And it's because of everything that's gone on around us. Things have changed drastically. But we still do these vulnerability studies in the workplace because workplace violence, and we do threat assessments of the workplace. We do security audits and vulnerability studies, and we will go in to a workplace, and I call a school, by the way, a workplace, because, you know, people are working there, teachers are working, you know, and all your staff are there, they're working, not only the teachers, but your custodians, you know, and everybody else that runs the schools. So it's a workplace, and we treat it the same. When we go in and do a vulnerability or threat assessment in a school. But in a commercial setting, such as a factory or any corporation, we'll go in and we'll do an assessment, a threat assessment, and we will look at all the aspects of that particular building or buildings, and we do it very impartially and non-biased, and the only thing we're there for is to show them their strong points and their weak points as far as security and safety of that establishment. We've had a lot of experience doing this. We've done all kinds of venues. I mean, we've done security audits and vulnerability safety security checks for Fortune 500 companies. We've done them at port authorities, Wall Street merger and acquisition companies, television studio, done several banking institutions. We did a Broadway theater and entertainment show, you know, so entertainment and Broadway theaters. We do power companies, food warehouses, distribution companies, apartment complex, and, of course, our public school districts. And while we're doing these, we try to instill our proactive plan of zero tolerance to violence or threats of violence, and we have provided definite courses of action to reduce the risk of destruction, economical loss, and loss of public confidence. And when we were really doing these back in the 90s and the beginning of 2000, we were doing an awful lot of these, an awful lot of these different companies and a lot of the schools. And when we did it, we did it as an independent company, and we had, you know, we didn't sell any security equipment or guard services. We didn't have any of that. We did not seek to provide any equipment or services to anyone at all, any one of our clients. We provided an objective viewpoint with no bias towards security technology, guard, police services, or other related security offerings. All these projects were conducted by our experienced security professionals who have had experience in analyzing security problems from a viewpoint of risk management, technology, and managerial policy. And I would utilize my staff when we did them, and my staff consisted of both male and female agents, and we had a combined service record of at least 150 years of investigative skills, knowledge, and experience. And that's a lot of experience. And when I did the schools, I would even train retired school teachers, get them a license under our agency, and they were part of the team that would go into the schools and do these assessments. And it was amazing the way we did this. I mean, everybody that I spoke to, all the superintendents from around the state, everybody thought that their school was just, I mean, you could not penetrate the school. And I was told by more than one superintendent that you'll never get in that school because they don't know you. Well, there hasn't been a building or a school that I haven't been able to get into, walk into. And I can't tell you how many superintendents that I telephoned from the principal's office without the principal not even knowing that I was there. And, I mean, that's how scary it was. And a lot of times we would go in, and the way we would get in there is we would just walk in with the teachers in the morning. You know, I've always told our investigators that if you look like you know what you're doing, you act like you know what you're doing, then you're never going to have a problem. You know, if it walks like a duck, it looks like a duck, you know, it sounds like a duck, then it must be a duck. And that's the thing. We used to walk in with briefcases, you know, Dunkin' Donuts coffee, and you know, and a donut, and we'd walk right in. I mean, I walked into banks. I called the president of a bank one day when we did his facility, and he says, "Do you think you can get into the vault?" And I not only was able to get into the vault, I called him from his office, which was secure or supposed to be secure, and I said, "Lynn, you'll never guess where I am right now." He says, "Where are you?" I said, "I'm sitting at your desk." And his desk was obviously supposed to be protected, and he couldn't believe it. I had a large insurance company who said that we couldn't get into their building. And we didn't only get in, we got into the computer room, and I called the representative of the insurance company who was out of Connecticut. It was a large insurance company. They're still in business. And they're still there. And I called that representative, and I says, "I want you to know that we were able to penetrate the computer room, and I'm calling you from one of the phones in the computer room, and you have people working here, and not one person has come up to us and asked us who we are or what we're doing." And, I mean, that's amazing. That's just amazing if you think about it. I mean, how secure are these people? You know, and we're all supposed, all these employers, including schools, are supposed to, by law, you know, make it safe for their employees, for the students, for anybody that is going there, that belongs there. And here I am putting at least 7 or 8 strangers inside these different facilities. And we didn't belong there. And like I said, we were strangers. In one facility, we took myself and 2 other guys, we took an elevator from the first floor, and it brought us to the second floor of a school. And when the door opened, we were inside a classroom. And the class was going on, and not one person said a word to us. I mean, it's just, it was amazing. It was amazing. And so from that point when we started doing this, what I decided to do is I put together a school safety manual. And I was going around, and I was teaching different investigators how to properly go into a school and how to do a good vulnerability, security, safety check of that of any school. And we still have this school safety manual, and we still utilize it. And it's a great, great tool. And the thing is with this, anybody can pick up that manual, and they can utilize it and teach their employees on how to go into any building, not only a school, and perform a good and viable security, safety, vulnerability audit. And it's a proactive thing that we came up with. And we've been around the state with it. I've been to New York City with it. I've been to, like I said, been to Massachusetts, and it's always worked, and it's almost foolproof. And these are the things that I think that we have to get back to, because these are the basics. These are the basics, keeping people safe and secure. And are you going to tell me now that we need to go to a commercial?
I actually am not going to tell you that, David. We don't have a commercial break for today.
Well, by golly, then we're going
to
keep going.
You're safe. Keep going.
Well, all righty. You know, I'm going to go on the schools. A school safety security plan needs to be multidimensional and essentially proactive. And the manual that we have is a tool and only a tool and is a guide in collecting information concerning the school's atmosphere, philosophy on safety and security issues. It shows the administrators exactly what their school temperament is all about. And when I was doing the research to come up with this manual, I researched everything through the United States Department of Justice, the National Crime Justice Service, Justice Information Center, the Center for Prevention of School Violence, and the National Association of School Safety Manual. And we were there to educate and to perform these security and vulnerability audits, and then to give the results, written results, to the school administrators. We addressed a wide variety of issues that affected security and safety of the schools, the students, the faculties, like I said, the employees, and the parents by adopting a proactive, interactive security philosophy. And again, this is all through educating the administrators, the teachers, and the parents. And it went over so well that we were able to get funding when we were doing these through a law enforcement grant. It was a federal grant that, because we went through a police department in whatever jurisdiction we were in, we told them of our idea. They liked it, and they would put in for a grant because I would give them a cost of what it would be. And then we would go in, and they would secure the money, and we would go in and do our audit. Well, you know, the purpose of the manual was designed so that we could, again, show the schools their strengths and deficiencies and to provide recommendations which will permit individual school administrators to develop an overall plan to minimize the school security risks. Therefore, it was preserving the school as safe havens for learning. And the plan was promoting zero tolerance to violence, threats of any violence, zero tolerance for bullying, teasing, hazing, harassing, or taunting students in or around the school. And the approach we used was a combined teamwork of common sense to create a safe learning school environment. Now, again, I'm talking about schools, but this can be done in any organization, any corporation, any business at all, and I don't care what it is. We can adapt this to anything because obviously when I did it for the schools, we had already been doing security audits and vulnerability studies and threat assessments, you know, for all these other different types of companies. A definite course of action is to work with the school districts to improve existing safeguards and policies, which did increase and deterred any tragic incident from happening. And that was the key right there. And, you know, any building that I got into, any corporation or any school, I cannot tell you, I don't care what they had in place for security, they always, we've always found some door somewhere that was propped open by a piece of wood. You know, in these corporations, it was because people wanted to go out and smoke. So they leave a door unlocked, even though their policies and procedures say that you don't leave any door unlocked. And I even have had some companies, Homeland Security companies, and we did one not too long ago. We did this great company. It was a great company, and they were in the middle of the state of New Hampshire here, and the CEO of the company got a hold of me and said he thinks he has a problem, and we went in, and they had everything. They had everything in place. They had, you know, the you had to use, you know, a key and or a key card to get in the building. They only had certain entrances that the employees could go in. They had a certain entrance for any visitors. They had the visitors' passes. They had the visitors' sign-in sheet. They had it all. And we walked into that building, and it was huge. It was a huge building. And we went in there, and we had no problem getting in, and we were making unauthorized access all day long. And again, I brought at least 8 people with me, and we did all 3 shifts because they run 24/7. And we got in every time, and it was always by following some other employee into the building, and all you had to say is, hey, hold the door. And, you know, how much does it take or how long does it take to educate employees to say, hey, wait a minute, you don't hold the door open for anybody, no matter even if you know that person. You know, they have to swipe their card to get in, because once they swipe the card, there's a record that they swipe their card, you know, because the computer picks it up and it makes a permanent record of that. But if you're just letting people in at random and that's what they were doing, then there's no record of how or who went in there or what time they were in there. And they had cameras. They had everything. I mean, everything that they needed was in place. The problem was is that they weren't trained to use what they had. And so we did this for 3 days just to show that it wasn't a fluke, just to show that it wasn't just one day and people were having a bad day. And it was ironic as heck that while we were doing this, the CEO was threatened. There was a call that came in. We worked with the local PD, and we were in the building, and the CEO got threatened. So needless to say, supposedly security was supposed to have been tightened, and yet I still have people walking in and out of that building. And like I said, this was a Homeland Security building. They were a Homeland Security facility. And by the time I got done with the report and I met with the CEO and his staff and laid out what we did, and we photographed everything and showed them the doors that were open because of the smokers, and showed them how easy it was for us to make unauthorized access into their building, getting into different offices, getting into places where we should never have gotten into, and one of them was where they had chemicals, and these chemicals were lethal, and we were in there. And again, we would utilize a body video so that we didn't just say that we were there. We were able to show them that this is where we were at this time, and this is what we did. They told me that we couldn't make access to the roof. We were all over that roof. I mean, we were everywhere. We got into the payroll room. This this particular company made a lot of different things for the medical profession, and we got into sterile places that we shouldn't have been, and we weren't wearing gowns or gloves, and no one, not one worker, approached us and asked us, you know, who we were or what we were doing. And, you know, and it's like that everywhere we go. I mean, you could go in to any of these buildings and ask an employee for directions to any place you want, to HR, to any place in that facility. And, you know, people are just so willing to help you out. And I mean, that's just the nature of people. And until we took all three shifts and we educated them on what was actually going on in their workplace, they were amazed. They were simply amazed. But by the time we got out of there, I can guarantee you that that place was much more secure and that the employees were much more diligent. And we stayed in there. We were at this particular facility for over 3 weeks. They did get used to seeing us, but they also knew that if we didn't have a badge on, that they wouldn't open the door for us. If we didn't have a badge on, that they would ask, excuse me, sir, do you belong here, or do you need directions to the front office, or can we escort you to the front office? I mean, it was amazing. And, you know, and when we do these type of studies, we not only do the building inside of the building or, you know, the rooftop and the whole nine yards, we also do the parking lots, and we watch the flow of traffic and which way things are going. We do the both, if they have more than one parking lot, which most places do, because they have one for the people that work in the office and the ones that work in the factory. And we do the entire layout. We do, for the lack of a better word, the entire campus. And then not only do we do that, we do the roadways that are leading to and from the facilities. Because these facilities that we go into, they are vulnerable to attack because of the nature of what they do and who they work for. And so a school is the same thing. It's when we go and do a school, you know, most of the time it was the shop, any type of shop room, classroom, they would prop the doors open, whether because some of the machinery was too hot, so they would prop a door open, even when they know they're not supposed to. So we were able to, again, in a school, we photographed that. I can't tell you how many doors that I knocked on if the door was closed. And this happened in both a corporation and in a school. In a school, another student, if you're leaning up against a door and you're on the outside, they'll let you in. And if you knock on a door at a corporation, they'll let you in if you knock loud enough. And this happened all the time. I had an occasion to do one just recently, a vulnerability study and threat assessment at a very large food supply chain. And not only was I able to get into the building, and they just doubled in size, by the way. Their building is huge. It's the biggest warehouse that I've ever seen of food supply. And I was also able to make access into the vehicles, the tractor-trailer trucks, because they were unlocked. The keys were in them. And I was able to go into the trailers that had already been packed, and they were packed for delivery because they start delivering at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. They leave the yard. And these trailers were not locked. And when I brought that up to the CEO of that particular company, he was just amazed. He could not believe that all those grocery items, you know, especially today, were right there for anybody to go and just take them. And, you know, and he wasn't, you know, naive enough to think that somebody wouldn't penetrate his parking lot. I mean, that's probably one of the most easiest places to get into is a parking lot. And open a rear door of a tractor trailer truck, especially, you know, we just had Thanksgiving, and then I know that they had at least 20 to 30 tractor trailer trucks loaded with just turkeys. And if you don't have these doors locked, anybody can go and take anything they want. And he was astonished at just how simple it was that somebody could go and run amok anywhere, go any way they want, and do anything they want without anybody stopping them. And this particular place had its own security guard service. And supposedly they were on patrol. They made patrols. They made their rounds. And we showed them that, well, whatever you're doing, it isn't working. And these are the reasons why. And of course, you know, we do a day evaluation, and we also do a night evaluation, because most of your administrators haven't got a clue what's going on at night in their facilities, because they're not there. I mean, and 9 out of 10 times, half the lighting around the facility or the campus didn't even work. These schools, they weren't secure because they were having basketball games. And once you made, you know, you were going to a basketball game, so you had access to the gym. But once you're in the gym, there was nothing that was stopping you from accessing the rest of the school. And, you know, again, we brought this to the attention of the administrators. And, you know, they took the preventative measures, and we stopped that. And because this is just part of it. And this is something that a private investigator who is well-trained in security and safety can get involved in, and you can make a lot of money, believe me, by doing this. And we had a lot of fun doing this. We really did. And the reason why I say we had a lot of fun, because it was opening our eyes, too. We didn't realize how vulnerable these places really were. And when somebody gives me a challenge that says, you'll never be able to do this or do that, well, I love those types of challenges, because it isn't that I like to show people that they're wrong. It just, these places aren't as secure as they should be. And they can't rely on a janitor to be a security guard. And that's what your schools were doing. You know, the janitors are supposed to lock up and everything else. When we did night studies, I can't tell you how many doors were unlocked or windows were left open. And there was nobody inside the building. Nobody, not a janitor, nothing. And we went in there, going in through an unlocked window, obviously through an unlocked door. And again, by photographing and documenting the way we made entry, and I can guarantee you that when we left that building, it was secure, it was locked, because I would never, ever leave anything unlocked if I found a door unlocked or if I found a window open. And in all instances, I also called, whether it be a school, the school administrator, or whether it be a factory, I'd call the CEO or his designee, and I would have them come down, meet with me, and I would show them exactly what was going on. And they were astounded. They just could not believe it, that this was happening. And so that's why I'm saying that these types of clients and this type of work is some of the best work that I've done since I've been an investigator. It really is. And you're helping people. You're showing them, again, like I said, you show them their strong points and you show them their weak points. You know, you don't go in and break down everything that they have, because they do have some very good programs in place. We go through their policies and procedures with them, and we get copies of them. We go through their evacuation plans. We go through everything that they have. And we even sit down, like with schools, with school board members, and we'll talk to them and explain to them everything that we found and everything that has happened. And they don't know what's going on, because most of them are lay people. You know, most of your school board members, they're elected officials. They haven't got a clue. But we do, because we're trained to have a clue. And that's why this type of work for private investigators is so important. And if you can instill that feeling of security and safety in your students, your faculty, your employees, and in yourself, you have a much better feeling about where you are, what you're doing, and why you're doing it. And, you know, and a lot of things would probably start happening that are happening today in these different facilities. Workplace violence is up. Workplace violence, people don't understand this. A lot of it starts at the home. It starts on a domestic issue. The person gets so involved because he's had an issue or she's had an issue with a significant other that they go and try to approach their significant other while they're at work. And that's a no-no. And we try to educate these companies not to let that happen. And you don't have to let them in there. And I've put people, many people, victims, in safe houses while they're going through their domestic issues, because they're so afraid of their significant other. And that to do that, you know, and we work along with the police, but to do that, we're helping society. We really are. And we're instilling that safety feeling. And like I said, you know, what is it? You know, safety means to feel safe, you know, and everybody wants to feel safe wherever they are. Well, these people didn't feel too safe, trust me. You know, we just had a couple of companies that had, there's still one of them that's out now, but that had these protesters, and not only protesters, they weren't doing layoffs. Again, I got a brain cramp here. They were doing strikes, and we do strikes. And what we do during a strike is we don't picket. We don't do any of that. We don't watch the picketers or anything else. We're mainly concerned with the building and the safety of management and the safety of the product, whatever it is that's inside that building. That's what we're concerned with. And we make sure that the people that are on strike can't go in there and vandalize or do anything to the company's property. And, again, they look at us to do that, because if they can call the police when an incident is happening, but the police are not paid to sit there in their cruiser because company is on strike or may be on strike. I mean, let's face it, the police don't have time to do that. Police and fire, you know, they react. They react to a situation. They react to when things happen. It's a reaction. We look at everything proactively. We want to take care of it. We want to nip it in the bud before it happens. And we show the company ways of doing that. And that's what these studies are all about. It's too bad we don't have any questions, huh, Rusty?
Well, what I would have to say is we are running out of time, my dear. So what would you offer as advice in regards to making sure that you have the tools in place, that your security features, in order to continue to be safe?
Well, the
the
biggest thing is what I tell everybody is this, okay? If you don't know what's broken, you can't fix it.
Right.
You know, and so that's why it's so important that if I owned a large corporation and I had many employees, I would want an assessment made, a security vulnerability study made of my facility. Because I don't care how I think it's secure or how safe it is, I would want an outside firm to come in and do an assessment and tell me exactly what's going on with my company. You would think that that's what they would want. And for a while, that was working. That was going on. And now, you know, we do maybe two or three a year. And it's sad because there's more than two or three companies around. You know, and I don't care where we are. You know, we live here in the state of New Hampshire. But wherever you are in the country, if you own a company and you're listening, you definitely want to reach out to some professional and who knows what they're doing and go in there to your company and do some type of an assessment, security risk assessment. You can call it whatever you want, but it is a vulnerability study. And because it's going to give you a true picture of what really is going on within your facility and around your facility. And to me, that's very important.
I have to tell you, back in the old days, I did a lot of vulnerability assessments because I was HIPAA compliant and I was working with LTCs, long-term communities,
yeah.
In regards to designing and implementing Wi-Fi systems that wouldn't breach HIPAA compliance and people couldn't hack into the mainframes for patient records and so on and so forth. So it's really mind-boggling to me how easy it is to be unsecure in a very innocent type of way. So security assessments, hands down, are so worth the value. And if you're really smart and you're really good, a lot of these companies will offer, you know, a free assessment if you pay for the security upgrade at the end type thing. But anyway, we're down to about 90 seconds. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with our audience tonight?
The only thing I want to say is, you know, safety is everybody's business. And
mm-hmm.
I'm all about safety. And, you know, I say it at the end of each show, stay safe out there. And that's what it's all about. You know, and it's our job as adults to take care of our children and to make sure that they're safe. And I think it's also wherever you are, whatever you're doing, if you see something that's going on that shouldn't be going on, pick up a phone, call 911, and report it. And that's how simple it is.
So, as always, be safe, be good, be kind. Until next Monday.
And thank you for listening, and happy shoveling.
Not funny, David. You're coming over to help, right?
Yeah,
bye.
That's right, do mine.
You are listening to Ask a PI Talk Radio with hosts David Ducheneau. author, PI, former Marine, and former New Hampshire State Trooper, and Rusty McDonald, PI, author, motivational speaker, and international radio talk show host.